Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission is to explore evidence that we continue beyond physical death. These episodes encompass reincarnation, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other extraordinary phenomena. And I have a feature on my homepage on my website where you can quickly and easily send me a voicemail. If you have a question or you want to comment on an episode or have anything else to say, please feel free to use this and I might add your voice to an upcoming episode. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, which is an extra 30 minutes, please join the Patreon campaign where you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. This week I'm talking to Regan Forsten about his book, 3 hours, 33 minutes in heaven. Regan is a hypnotherapist and a former board member of the Michael Newton Institute. He is also a practitioner of the quantum healing hypnosis technique. He is also the author of several books and has appeared on many podcasts, radio and TV shows. Hi Regan, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Simon.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called 3 hours, 33 minutes in heaven.
Yes, sir.
It's a kind of a autobiography, isn't it? But you focus on the kind of spiritual experiences you've had in your life?
Yeah, I wrote it as, I put some of the biography in there because when I actually experienced the other side, I could realize that it was all a combination of all kinds of crazy things that happened to me in my life that kind of led me to be able to discover this, you know, process and hoping that when people read it, they would be thinking of their own journey, because we all have a book in us, you know, we have a past, and sometimes God takes us through crazy zigzags in our life, which don't seem to make any sense for a while. And then finally, some spiritual happening happens in your life, and you realize that all those zigzags were for a reason. You know, they get you to this point. That's why I began the book with, when I was 4 years old, that was the first time I had like an out of body experience, but a 4 year old doesn't know how to process that. You know, I would wake up and I'd find myself on the ceiling looking down at my body, and it just confused a little boy, you know, and then I'd be back in my body looking up and I could see a white globe, which was probably my spirit on the ceiling. And then I would bounce back and forth, and it scared me so much. I jumped up and ran into my parents' room, and I don't know how to, all my parents know is I'm kind of scared. So my dad came in the room, took a broomstick under the bed in the closet, said, no, there's no ghosts here or whatever. But I didn't know how to do that. But it happened like 3 nights in a row. So I began to be kind of afraid of going to sleep. So what I did, what was the four-year-old do that figures this thing out is on the fifth night, I just put my back against the wall and I tried holding my eyelids open. So I went go to sleep because I was afraid it happened. But then I did eventually. And then when that happened, I was still sitting up and I opened my eyes and there was two men standing in my room, but I wasn't afraid. They were kind of whitish, you know, I would consider them, you know, like they're wearing white or something as I remember it. But I wasn't scared at all. It didn't seem weird or anything. I was very calm. They were very nice. And one of them said to me, I think it was telepathic or a voice, I don't know. But anyway, I heard, he said, it's okay. You can go to sleep. We won't let it happen again. And then I just felt like, okay. And I closed my eyes and never happened again till I was in my 20s. I was like 23. And I think I was old enough and, you know, kind of on my way spiritually a little bit that when I had an out-of-body experience, I was ready for it, you know, although it was still kind of confusing, but it was, at this time it was exhilarating, you know, it's like, when I came back in my body, I was like, okay, this is proof that I'm not this body. I'm spirit, you know, I'm soul. So, that's when my fear of death left and I started on this journey of self-discovery of everything spiritual, you know, back in my 20s. But here's the cool thing, Simon, that happens, because a lot of people who are just listening to this, sometimes they've had something they consider maybe an out-of-body thing, or they figure it's otherworldly, other than here. But then when you kind of come out of it, there's a lot part of your mind that just says that you just, oh, it was just my imagination. It's not really something spiritual. So here's the cool thing that happened that I mentioned in my book was when I was, I think, 23, I was doing this spiritual exercise that a group, they were called Ekankar. And in a weird sort of way, I was kind of, they kind of, you know, that path or something found me. And basically they gave me a mantra to sing that would open up myself to have soul travel experience, which would be out of body. And so I'm, you know, remembering that thing that happened as a child, I thought, oh, I got to try this because maybe it'll happen now, you know? And so they just had me sing a spiritual verse, HU. It's an ancient name for God. It's, and when you sing it, it's kind of like Om or Om, but this is kind of more like you. And they said, you know, just sing that, put your attention on your third eye or your Israel, as they would call it. And they say, and then start having an experience with God. So I just tried it and tried it for like 6 weeks. And I would always feel good and relaxed and calm after doing that, but nothing really happened. And then one night I sang it a bit. I kind of drifted off a bit. And then all of a sudden I found myself totally conscious, totally aware in another world. And it was otherworldly because the skies were spirit sent me. The skies were yellow instead of like they're blue here. And I was looking at it looked like thousands of acres to me, it was kind of like wheat because it had kind of a golden hue. And every acre just scattered around as far as I could see were these magnificent trees. I mean, it's like when you just look at this tree, it just gives you chills. It just looks like so, I don't know how it was so spiritual or so powerful or whatever. And then all of a sudden I realized I was seeing 360 degrees. So then I realized, oh my gosh, I'm out of my body, you know? And I was about 100 feet above like where the ground was. But when I realized that, it was like it shocked me so much. And I'm realizing, oh my God, I did it. I'm out of my body. That shock brought me back into my body. So I kind of woke up and I kind of yelled like, whoa, I did it, you know, because it was just such. And when I was in that space, the thing that made it real is I felt like somebody was pouring buckets of love over me. You know, it was like kind of a deep, nurturing, beautiful love that I've not experienced only briefly in this lifetime. So it was the first kind of like dream that I ever remember having. So I ran in the other room. I grabbed a pad and I wrote it all down. Came back. My wife was still sleeping. I shook her and woke her up and told her about my experience. She says, oh, that was interesting. She didn't realize that I just had, for me, this big awakening, you know? So, but here's the kicker to this that made it all kind of become really real to me. As time went by, like in spiritual settings, I would talk about this. And, you know, you talk about it so much and over so many years that pretty soon your mind at one point, it kind of does that human thing again where you go, you know, I wonder if that really happened. I've talked about it so much, but it was kind of fading, you know? And so I said to God, I said, this feels kind of sad. Like, I know that kind of happened, but now I'm kind of having doubts. And I go, can't you do something to tell me or show me that was really real, you know? And I felt kind of embarrassed about that because I thought, well, you know, like a doubting Thomas in the Bible where, you know, he wanted to put his hand in the wound of Jesus to make sure that was him that he was really seeing. I made that really strong thought. And about a month, might have been maybe 6 weeks or 2 months, but somewhere pretty near to when I asked God to try to do something that would really tell me that I wasn't just imagining that because I didn't want to lose that. So I'm a performer at the time. I'm a professional clown. And I was kind of high up as being known in America as a clown. And so I got booked at a lot of fairs and malls and did a lot of things for the corporations for their children and stuff when they had parties. I did the Venetian in Vegas. I did 26 shows over a couple of years when they had their big annual thing for their families and stuff, all the employees. So anyway, I was booked at the Angels Camp. It was where they have the International Frog Jumping Contest that's been going on for over 100 years. And people would bring frogs from all over the world, and they would have this jumping thing, and whoever's frog after 3 days of going through everything would get some prize money, you know? And I was like the MC as a clown, and then I did it like a magic show in between. Well, there was a gentleman that I was working with. He was an act. It was just before me. And he was dressed up like a miner, a gold miner from the 1800s. And he looked authentic. I mean, he had his beard was about a foot long, and he had, his guns were all of every bit of clothing and everything he had was authentic. And he would tell stories because we were in gold country up there. So he would tell stories to the audience about the the 1800s. And he was, wow, quite a storyteller. Well, over the many days of the fair, we became really good friends. And he was just such a nice guy. So as we're leaving the fair, he says to me, why don't you and your wife come up and visit my wife and I up here in the mountains for a weekend? And I said, sure. So about a month later, my wife and I visited him and his wife, and we had a nice, pleasant weekend. There was nothing, no talk about God, no talk about spirituality, no, none of that, but it was just a fun weekend. So we're saying goodbye. I get to my car, I open the door, and all of a sudden I feel a hand on my shoulder. And I turned around, his name was Carl, and I turned around and I go, what's up, Carl? And he goes, you're going to think this is kind of strange maybe, but I feel I need to ask you something. He says, I want to ask you about your, and I forget how he worded it, either dream or your vision or something like that. But he said, let's say he said, I want to ask you about your vision. And instantly, now this is 40 years after I had that out-of-body experience, okay? 40 years later. And so when he tapped me and he said, I want to ask you about your dream, instinctively I said, what color was the sky? And he said, yellow. And he said, okay, and what were you looking at? And I said, and I told him, I says, what was I looking at? And he says, those magnificent, beautiful trees. And when he said that, I got weak-kneed, almost fainted. He had to hold me up, and he says, I need to take you back inside. So we went back inside, and he told me, he says, Regan, I can't really explain this, and I don't know what this is, but I seem to have this knowledge of people that have had this spiritual dream. And, you know, where you're in a place where there's the yellow skies and you're looking at these magnificent wheat fields, like, and these spiritual huge trees, they're like sentinels, you know, like protecting this area or whatever. And I still was just, I'm kind of quivering, kind of shaking. And while he's talking to me, I'm going, thank you, God. I said, this was the biggest gift you ever gave to me. I'll never doubt again when I'm having some sort of thing that happens in my mind that's a spiritual experience, you know. And he said that what happens is he just, when he comes across people, he has a sense. But he says sometimes people have a sense that they're supposed to talk to him. Like he said, just a few weeks ago when he was being the docent and he was giving this big speech, he was hammering shoes and like as a blacksmith and talking about the old West and gold and everything. When his show was done, a person from another country came up to him and embarrassingly said to him, says something like, I think you're going to think this is weird, sir, but I think I'm supposed to ask you about my dream. And he would say, what dream? And he said, the yellow sky. And what were you looking at? The beautiful oak trees. So that was so, you know, so cool that I was able to experience that, because that was a miracle that happened in, you know, in flesh and blood in this life, not something that happened when my eyes were closed, when I was meditating or when I was sleeping and had an out-of-body experience or something. So from then on, and I think even up till now, when I have these visions or things like this, I take them as this is the real thing. Now, you've had a life between life session. So you kind of know what this is like. But I've had a few people out of curiosity that have come to me to want to experience the afterlife. They'll go into trance. They'll see a past life. And then what I do is I have them be at their funeral or whatever, just to see if they need to stick around to comfort anybody. And sometimes they say, yes, I can't go back to source yet. I can't go back to heaven yet because I need to stick around because somebody in my family is grieving so much that I need to do something so that they know that I'm okay. So in this conversation we're having today, Simon, I'm probably going to find ourselves going off in little tangents here and there. But it made me think that one thing I should add now, when people experience the afterlife and this process at the Newton Institute that we do, for me, my success rate's about 92% as I keep all the statistics. And that means in the very first time that somebody allows themselves to go, you know, deep into trance, which most people can reach, even if they think they can't, they really can, because this process has been so fine-tuned over 40 years, when they do that, about 80% of the people the very first time have a wonderful out-of-body experience in heaven in full consciousness. And just like I did, although with me, I was that 20%, which wasn't successful the first time. And that's because I couldn't get myself to relax enough. My analytical mind kept going, well, what's going on? And okay, I'm seeing these images, but what does that mean? And all that. And that's not what you do. You just have to be kind of like where you just allow sleep to happen at night and you just relax. And then you start seeing all these images and, you know, go to the past life and everything. So what I have to do for some people, about 20% of them, is do a second, occasionally a third or a fourth session. But everybody that's hung in there and didn't give up has had a beautiful, enlightening experience. When I talk to people about this process that I went through where I was over there, I said, well, the closest thing people can relate to is when they hear about a near-death experience. And it's funny because when you say near-death experience, everybody's ears just kind of like, okay, I want to know about this. What is everybody's so curious about that, about what happens when we die, you know? Well, Michael Newton accidentally discovered this process, this must be 45 years ago or so now. And, and since he's done that, I mean, he helped 7,000 people go to the afterlife and back. And then as he was getting older, he realized that this process he had was just too important to be lost, and he decided to start the institute so he could train other people to do the same thing that he had discovered. And now there's 250 of us, soon to be about 275, because we have 25 people in this year-long training program right now. We have therapists that are scattered in 45 countries right now, so we're kind of all over the world, and we're doing this process. And Simon, the thing that's interesting now, we just realized we just passed the 70,000 mark of having 70,000 successful sessions. So anyway, and talking about that with people listening now, that they think, oh, you know, that sounds so crazy. I've never been hypnotized before. And they just feel that they can't. You don't realize as human beings how easily we are put into trance of some sort. A lot of times it's a very light trance that advertisers got it. They got the process really clicked down on how to get you to buy something by getting you in these light states of hypnosis where your subconscious accepts the suggestions they're throwing out that you need that product. You know, when I went to hypnotherapy school, I went, 2008 is when I went and spent a couple years there. And I was like, Simon, I know you do past life regressions, as you were mentioning, and whatever. Did you get formal training or how did you learn your hypnosis?
I did a 10-month course in clinical hypnotherapy. And then after that, I got certified in past life regression therapy.
Okay. And that was in England there?
Yeah, and I did a course with a guy for the past life regression, and he was good because he doesn't let you on his course unless he thinks you're up to it. It's not like some people, they run a course, they just want your money and they'll take anybody.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So that's good. So he figured you had an aptitude for it, you know, right off, or you had the desire.
Yeah.
Now, when I was in hypnotherapy school, you know, I thought I was kind of guided to, in my book, it explains how kind of I went from being an entertainer. After my clown years and everything, I actually graduated to being a ventriloquist for corporate events. And I would get paid very well, and they'd fly me in, and I would do a roast of the company is a ventriloquist show. And I had hundreds of letters of recommendation, and I finally started getting hired by some of the casinos, even for the adult stuff. So one of these things, one thing leads to another in your life. But in 2008, when the financial crisis happened in here in America and all over the world, in a way, instead of me getting like $5,000 a show to do a corporate event, I was lucky to even get hired, or they might have a budget of $500, and I couldn't raise my family or on that. So an associate of mine, when I was riding in the car and I was trying to figure out what to do with my life, she sees a little two-line ad in a little neighborhood newspaper that says, "Learn to hypnotize for free." And I thought, oh, wow. And I started me thinking, and I thought, is a corporate entertainer. I couldn't get hired anymore because the financial crisis was going on. But I thought, if I learned to be a stage hypnotist, I could survive on that, because I could do the same nightclub for 2 or 3 years in a row, because it would be the same show but with different people. So you'd always have a different show with the same template, you know. And I had had a talent agency years before, and I used to book hypnotists that had these big shows and everything. So I thought, well, that's what I'll do. But when I got into college and I started realizing how the mind works and how magical it is, that if something's not working or something's bothering your mind, you can go in there and just replace it, or, you know, add a new program, and people's lives could be changed. So at some point, I decided, you know what? I think I just want to help people with their problems and that, instead of making them quack like ducks on stage, you know. And so, you know, when I graduated, I didn't even want to get a regular job while I built my practice. I actually moved out of my apartment into my car. And for 8 years, Simon, I had the most awesome experience of my life, just going from place to place, like wherever God would send me, to do and help people with their problems. And, you know, with PTSD and fears and phobias and depression, anxiety, and that sort of thing. And it was so funny how God just took care of me. Like, I'd finish with one client and they would have some success and I'd feel good. And then they'd say, "Well, I don't know if you could do this, but I have a sister that has some PTSD, but she lives 100 miles from here." And I'd say, "Okay, I'll go." And I just knew that God was guiding me this whole time, kind of going with the flow. And I met the most, as I explained in my book, and I think that's what makes it kind of an interesting read in a way, is that you see that how I just bounced around from here to there to there. And every time that I would follow my inner guidance, in a sense, I would run into somebody that really needed my help. All of a sudden I'm hearing the most horrible stories of abuse and sadness in that people were having. And I realized, it was so funny, because all my life I've been sheltered from that. And being a comedian for all those years, I was seeing the funny side of life, the happy side of life. And now God has me doing the reverse, and I'm seeing all the pain in the world. I'm seeing all, you know, everything. And so I kind of realized that's what my early training was, is I had to get a kind of a 360 degree view of life, of the total joy and fun and happiness and total sadness. It was hard for me at first. And, you know, as a hypnotherapist, when you hear somebody's stories, or when you're doing a past life regression, sometimes it gets very emotional, doesn't it, Simon? Because they're, you know, in a sense, viewing or seeing something that wasn't so pleasant that they went through in another lifetime. But I find when people do that in a session, there's something about when people go back to the source of where a problem started. Like if it didn't start in this lifetime, and some people are open to say, well, maybe this issue that I have, or maybe this karma that I'm experiencing now, has something to do with something that happened beyond this life in a past life. Well, when they experience that and they see that the root came from a problem in another life, when they come back here, it's almost like magic, as their problems just seem to just disappear. And I'll give you a good example of that. When a nurse came to me wanting to have a life between life session, and she had not been hypnotized before, but she said that she was so desperate. Her issue was she was having lots of panic attacks because of a work-related issue. She was a nurse, and there's three doctors that rotated at this hospital she was at during the week. This one doctor, Simon, was so cruel to her emotionally that she would have panic attacks sitting in her car, knowing he was going to be in there when she went in the day. And she would start shaking and start crying. And she took all she could do to get out of the car and to go in there, because she just knew that this guy, for no reason, was going to be cruel to her in some way. So in this process of life between lives, people get to go before council. I send people homework, and they write a list of questions they want to have answered in the afterlife. They write a list of people that are key players in their life, and of the good, the bad, and the ugly, and write a sentence or two about them. And then, as I'll explain in a little bit too, you're probably familiar with Dolores Cannon's work, are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And she does the QHHT.
Yeah, exactly. I'm certified with Newton Institute and with her too. And they're so similar, and the process is so similar, I've been able to kind of weave them together. So my sessions with clients are my average sessions about 5 to 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're pretty long. I've had them go as long as 10, Simon. That was, oh my gosh, that was crazy. But that person's life was so complicated that when we're on the other side, we had so much we had to unravel and to find out and whatever. But so that was an outlier in a sense, that 10-hour one, but it was something to experience. But so anyway, because with Dolores Cannon, she didn't go quite as far as Michael Newton, although she knew about all these things, but she mostly concentrates. You get a person in trance, they go to a past life, they see themselves pass away, and then she asks to talk to the higher self, and she has the higher self answer any questions they have about their life. With Newton, what we do is we have that done before council. And sometimes the higher self also. Now we go on another tangent over here, and I'm thinking, so I don't forget. One beautiful thing, Simon, it's the thing that I think was the most exciting to me about this discovery that now anybody can go to the afterlife, is the fact that we discovered that when a person decides to be born and come down in a physical body, they don't put 100% of their soul self into the physical body. They leave approximately about half of their soul energy back home, which is the source where we all come from. So what that means is everybody alive has, you know, that's here, like Simon, you have your higher self. I have my higher self that's there. One of the things that's the most exhilarating in a session is that when people come face to face with their other part of themselves. And what I do in a session is I ask them, the counsel, I says, can my client see their higher self? And instantly the higher self's there. And I have them explain. I says, now, this is a joyous thing. Now you're looking at your higher self, that part of you, and I'll have them describe to me what they see. And so they'll just say, oh my gosh, I'm this beautiful purple and this green and this orange swirling around, because they're seeing like this, you know, they're seeing spirit in light form, you know? What's really good in these sessions is I have my client walk into themselves to feel what it feels like for a few minutes, of what it feels like when you're totally back home and you're totally yourself. And the expression on people's faces when they're in trance, Simon, is just amazing. Some of them, I've had them go like, wow, oh, wow. And they feel like they're, oh my gosh, what am I thinking of here? The wisest guy in the Bible. In the Bible, let's see, Solomon. Yeah, they feel like Solomon, they say, you know, because they just seem like they know everything, they sense everything, and they feel this love like never before. And that's a beautiful experience in a life between life thing for someone. And then what I do is I give them the post-hypnotic suggestion to really remember how it feels, remember how it's all the senses of how it feels. So when they come back down to earth and they come back in their physical body, when they're going through issues and problems, I have them close their eyes and recall that feeling of being all knowing, of being, you know, in this most loving place. And clients have told me that that's helped them to calm down in their current life and just realize their higher self and to stop complaining and moaning about this big problem they have to go through and just get to work and to learn whatever lesson it is in that difficult thing that they're doing. So, you know, that's that. Now, I didn't experience that when I was there. Mine was, I would say, of all the sessions, and I've done hundreds too, just like you've done hundreds of past life regressions. They're all, I would say, similar, but they're all different because every person is unique in their own spiritual walk. That's what makes this so real because, you know, people say, well, I think people are making all this up and this couldn't be happening or whatever. And I say, well, we're doing this like scientifically in a way because we use the same template for everybody. And pretty much everybody has the same experience. So isn't that the definition of science, you know, of proving something is having an experiment which can be reproduced easily and over and over and over and over again. So are you familiar? There's a matter of fact, he'd be great to have on your show too, Simon, Richard Martini.
Hi, Simon here. As some of you may know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. Now, taking part in a past life regression is an amazing thing, and past life regression therapy can be a powerful process. I conduct sessions over Zoom, so if you've ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session or have an issue you want to work on, go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, where you can message me or you can book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I am offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's been on the show maybe 4 or 5 times.
He's been on yours?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I just love that guy. Yeah, because he was a documentary filmmaker in Hollywood, and he heard about this process, and he was always really curious about things. But he says, well, I'm kind of a disbeliever until it kind of be proved. So he asked some Michael Newton therapists if he could film their sessions, and he began to film it. And after about the 8th or 10th one, he's going, okay, these are different therapists, different people of different ages, different religions, and they're all having the same experience. So he decided to have one for himself, and he had an amazing experience in the afterlife. I think he's done about 6 of them now, if I'm not mistaken. So he goes back every once in a while. But then he proceeded to do 2 documentaries. So people, you can find him on. Do you have Gaia over there too? You do, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think both of his documentaries are there. One's called The Flip Side, and the other one's called Hacking the Afterlife. And it's all about him trying to prove that mediums are real and that this life between life thing is a real happening, you know. And he's very articulate, you know, he's just very articulate in the way he presents all this research he's done and finding that what I'm doing and our other 250 therapists are doing is actually actually happening. All right, so now my mind just went to whoop, I want to tell you more about my experience over there of the highlight of my 3 hours and 33 minutes in the afterlife. As I mentioned, the very first time that I tried this is when I was in training. And so they had a new person that was training like me to be my therapist, but then they had a teacher sitting right next to him to help guide him. So after about an hour and a half, they just gave up on me and they said, okay, we're just going to bring you out of whatever. I guess I was in a very light trance, but it wasn't enough to go to the afterlife. And I was feeling really depressed. Like I was so hoping to have this experience, but I was remembering how in hypnotherapy school, I was the last one in the class to experience hypnosis. I kept volunteering every time the teacher would say, oh, we want to volunteer up here for hypnosis. And I would raise my hand because I wanted to experience hypnosis. And every time I go up, nothing would happen and nothing would happen. But on the ninth time, it finally did. And I was so happy. So when I was in training for the Newton Institute, I had this fear like, oh my gosh, what if my monkey mind gets in there and I can't relax enough? And what if I can't do it? So the very first time, that's what happened. So the next day, the other 16 therapists are all talking about this life-changing experience they had in the afterlife. And I'm the only one in the class and that didn't experience it. So I was so fortunate, and I think God guided the right person, the right persons to me. So for the next 3 days, they kind of worked on me. I did a little personal therapy with some issues from childhood. I did, you know, whatever. And then they says, okay, Regan, you got to try again. So this time I was able to go to a past life pretty quickly. And so if you ever have one of these sessions with one of our therapists, you're totally aware what's going on because you know the person's next to you. You're communicating. You're telling them what you see. But your mind kind of splits off into two, like having a split screen. And you're like in that afterlife. And then when you're answering questions, you dip back slightly into this life. And then you go back to the afterlife or to that past life. It's a interesting phenomena. The best way I explain it to people, Simon, is it's like you become a medium. You know, only mediums are a few steps ahead of us. They don't need to get into trance to see what they see. They're able to do it with their eyes wide open, you know. And so, when you kind of get to the state, it just kind of opens you up to the same things that happens with mediumship, where you see things, you feel things, and you can kind of tap into the afterlife. So I got in my session, I got to a past life, although I wasn't expecting what I was expecting, Simon. And I actually started crying because when I saw what I was doing in a past life, I was not being a good person in a sense. I was a Roman soldier and I could feel I had a white horse under me. I could feel it was big horse because it was spreading my legs far apart and I was galloping up and down this row. And apparently I was overseeing crucifixions and there was a lot of people I was passing on crosses. So in that body, what was going on in my mind was I felt kind of bad about it, but I thought, well, I'm just following orders here. I'm following Caesar's orders. I'm doing what I have to do. It's my job. These people are cuckoo. They're crazy. And we're just killing them all, you know. But because I'm aware that I'm going through the session and I'm seeing what I did in that lifetime, I started crying because it's like, you know, I'm putting my now personality into that, thinking I would never do something like that now. I mean, that's so far beyond me of anything that I would do in this lifetime. So I felt bad seeing myself doing something which I thought was really bad. However, on my deathbed, as this Roman soldier, I was on a kind of a flat table. It was kind of like a kitchen tabletop, but kind of high. My daughter was with me. I can still picture her in my mind now. She looked like in her 30s. She had this long straight hair down to her waist and she was holding my hand. And on my deathbed, I cursed Caesar. It was almost like I almost said the FU to Caesar, like, and that I swore as I was dying that I would never again do something that I knew inside was really a bad thing to do just because somebody ordered me to do it. And so that ended up being my life's lesson, what I learned in that lifetime, which is valuable to carry on to other lifetimes. So we got through that. And in my mind, in my awake mind, I'm going, oh, good. Oh, good. I could. I did it. I did it. Okay. So now I start having a little fear, but now am I going to get to go where we go between lives? So he has me float up away from that death scene. And all of a sudden, I'm in no place. And I it was just black. You know, everything was dark. I was not seeing anything, but I felt really good. I felt like, you know, comfort. I'm just kind of floating in this darkness. But then my monkey mind started getting in there again. And I'm thinking, oh no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. But the therapist, the person that was training the therapist that was helping me said, just let him alone. Let him just float in the black for a while. And the training therapist says to me through my facilitator, says, just float around in the black and just have a good time. And as you float, if you happen to notice anything like a little bit of light or a little bit of color or something, just let us know. And about a couple minutes later, all of a sudden, I saw a pinpoint of red. It was like, I don't know, about the size of a pea in the distance even. It was just so small. So I said to the facilitator, I says, oh, I see in the black now, there's just a pinpoint of light. And the therapist says, well, just go closer to the light. And in a nanosecond, I was through to the other side. I was standing right beside my guide, whose name ended up being Rebazar. And so what's cool about that is because you're aware that this is going on, but yet I'm here seeing my guide, that part of my mind just calmed down. And I says, okay, my God, I'm in the afterlife now. This is so great. So I kind of calmed down that way. And then I proceeded to have the most exhilarating experience or spiritual experience of my life. It's something, and people that have these sessions, Simon, I mean, some of them tell me even years after, they say, you know, that's something I think about almost every day, you know, and it just lightens my day. It makes me really realize that I'm down here and I'm in my mission right now and I'm doing it. And I know that my guides are up there watching me, and I know for sure there's an afterlife, you know, kind of thing. So then I was able to go before the council. I had a whole list of questions. And what's interesting is I found myself kind of merging with my higher self, because, and the way I knew that is because when my facilitator would ask me a question, I would answer in third person. You know, I would say, Regan, you know, Regan should do this, or Regan wasn't so stubborn, he'd be doing this, you know. And all of a sudden, my lower self is realizing, oh my God, that's me answering these questions, but that doesn't seem like me. That was like my higher self, you know, kind of chewing me out for slacking, you know. And so I just kind of went with it there. But so some of the questions that were on my list, my facilitator would ask, like, oh, why is this person in your life? Why is that? Me and my higher self, I would go, oh, I know what that is. Just go on. I don't need to answer that question. And it would, question after question, I just knew the answers already. They were just so obvious, you know. And so I got all my other questions answered from the council. And then I didn't go to my soul group. And, you know, and again, people listening, Peter, there's four things that almost 90% of the time my clients always experience. One is a place of rejuvenation, which remind me in a minute, Simon, or something. I'll tell you more about that, because I have some really interesting things happen in that place of rejuvenation. Okay. So you go to a place of rejuvenation, and then I'll ask the guide or something. I'll say, well, my client either wants to visit the soul group or the council. Which would be best for them to go to first? The guide will usually, you know, it's about 50-50. Sometimes people go to the soul group first. Sometimes they go to the council. Now, the council is a place where when people have this experience, that's almost a given that you're going to go before council, because I think the most important thing about these sessions, Simon, is that people get clarification and get answers to what's going on in their current life, about their difficulties, about their relationships and things. Because, and again, now I'm jumping, digressing of it, because I don't want to forget this. When I went a second time, Simon, up to the other side, and may I'll speak about that if we get done with my first one here. But I asked the council, because now I'd been one time, so I was prepared a little bit more this time with the questions. And I asked the council, I said, why have you opened up this portal of heaven for people to see Like, I mean, why all of a sudden is this happening? And they, what I got from them, the answer was, is that the earth and that is going through changes right now. And it's very important that each one of us is on task at doing our spiritual mission, whatever that might be. And so many people have gotten sidetracked, and so many people, they don't have enough clarity where they don't give 100% to whatever their mission is. But they said, we're hoping when people have the session, they come back into their physical body, realizing that heaven is real, you know, the afterlife is real, realizing that they're born for a reason. They have a goal. It's like, you know, like down here, the closest thing is like you decide to go to college and you take these certain courses and you want to make sure you learn those and you know you need to learn those. Well, same thing down here. We come down with the mission of something to do that has to do with uplifting, learning to be more loving and kind and compassionate. And so they want people to realize that, yes, they do have a mission. They found out what they need to do to step it up, to do their mission the best possible. And the other thing that they want people to really realize is that we're never alone. We all have a guide. We all have people in our soul group that are looking down on us, that are rooting for us to get with it and complete our missions. So, what I asked in my second session too, this is a question I had. I had the same counsels before. It was on my counselor was like a Chinese looking gentleman. I call him Late C. And he was his eyes, when they look at you, you just feel this joy. You almost burst out laughing because there's so much joy and happiness in his eyes. And when he looks at you, I'm picturing him right now, and I'm here where I'm talking to you, and I'm smiling right now because I can feel this love coming from his eyes. And then, I'm seeing that now. It threw me off my thought here. What he told me was, what I asked him was, I said, this portal, this heaven right here, and these, we've discovered six stations so far, which we could, I could go on about each station, but places that we've had people visit over there. And I said, okay, Late C, is this it? Is this, in other words, this is the afterlife? And he was sitting down. He jumped up and thrust his hands into the air and shook them. And it's like, you haven't seen anything yet, you know? And so what I realized that this portal that they've opened is kind of like heaven 101. You know, it's just a taste. It's just enough to kind of prove to you what you need to have proven so you can concentrate on your incarnation that you're in now. And that made sense to me because, in a sense, what we're finding out, just like now we're finding out that there's no end to space. You know, this new telescope now, with the Hubble telescope, we could see, I think it was like 13 billion light years into space. And now with the Webb telescope, we're seeing like 40 million light, and there's no end, you know, I mean, and with the trillions of even galaxies. And it just to wrap our head around that is, I don't think we're capable in this brain that we have, Simon, to even comprehend that. Okay, here's the thought that came to me too, because people ask this, well, if I go to the afterlife there, can I actually meet God face to face? And I would say, nope, because when we ask people when they're over there, they go, well, here, I'm here in heaven, where's God? And they just kind of smile at you and kind of look up, you know, it's like, you know, God is just even too big for heaven, you know. But what people do say is that in this place, this portal of heaven that people visit, they feel the presence in a much deeper level, you know, and the love is just out of this world, you know, that you feel. Your human dysfunction is gone, you know. I think I know so many people now, because of that telescope thing, and they're showing these things here, and they'll show this picture, and they'll say, okay, there's what you're looking at in this little postage size picture is like millions and millions of universes. And that's just one little tiny picture of space, you know, and people just, I just in awe, you know, of the world of what God's created. And so I think that's kind of like what happened. I mean, now this is just my own personal thing, but I think that, you know, once you get to the other side, that it's just infinite, you know, the growing. And it, in a way, it makes me feel kind of depressed sometimes about how small I feel. So do you ever get that way, Simon, when you see the vastness of things and realize in a way your mind can go, well, I guess I must be insignificant, you know, because everything is so great. But what you realize as you become more spiritual and you become part of this, you realize that although you may seem insignificant, you aren't. You're part of everything. You know, we're all a spark of this, whatever all this is. And so that's something I'm working on now, putting my head around, you know, and how that feels. The council over there, they'll say, well, okay, we've opened up this portal because we want you to know those three things, that you're never alone. You have a mission to do, and that there actually is an afterlife, because they're saying that the most important thing now is for us to concentrate on what our mission is in this life now. Like, we don't need to know all that other stuff there, but we just need to know that, you know, we have a job to do down here. Because they don't, in a sense, want us just to come down here and just be in la-la land and not doing anything and just being all spaced out. He says, no, got to get to work up there. When I was before my council, the two things I got from my council especially was, I asked them, I said, okay, I want to clarify what my mission is. And they said, Regan, which you're remembering now that you didn't remember 100%, but you kind of had a feeling for this, is your whole reason for coming into this life now is to concentrate on learning selflessness, learning kindness. And then I said, well, how am I doing? And they said, this made me feel pretty good. They said, we're really pleased with your progress, you know. But they said, there's always another layer of kindness. There's always another layer of selflessness. So don't get complacent, you know, so keep on going. So then, next to Late C, there was a female guide, and she had like a hoodie on, so I couldn't kind of see her face. But then she pulls the hoodie back, and it's this is beautiful. I call her, I think Kari Daka was her name. And she had something she wanted to say to me. And I says, okay, what is it? She says, Regan, I'm really proud of the way that in this lifetime, you have been balancing your female and your male energy. And that was really important, like another thing that I came down here to do. Because what I found out, Simon, is like when we're born both masculine and feminine. But what we tend to do is that predominant, if we're predominantly masculine or predominantly feminine, that's pretty much what we concentrate on. And most people negate that other part of themselves. And they say, no, you know, for me, my feminine side, characteristics in myself says, I need to balance those. So, she says, I'm really happy with how you've done that. And she says, that's really, really good. And that's really helping you. And that I remember I was kind of standing before the council and I was like, yes, I'm good. I know I'm doing good at that, you know, so it made me feel good.
Thanks a lot for coming on to the podcast. It's been absolutely fascinating. And the book is called 3 Hours, 33 Minutes in Heaven, and people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yeah, they can get it on Amazon or my website, where they can just click on a link to it. And if anybody out there wants to go to the afterlife, since COVID, we've been able to do these online. And you know what's surprised me, Simon, is that the success rate's practically the same. It just seems like, you know, have you ever done a past life regression on Zoom? You do them on Zoom or just in person?
I do them on Zoom.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how it just happens?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So if you want a past life regression, call Simon. But if you want to go beyond that, you can have another past life regression with me and we'll get you to the afterlife and back. I just did one in India recently, and I've been doing them from the East Coast. It still surprises me. And people go right into trance and they just have this perfect, beautiful experience right over Zoom, which is great. Or we do have in England, we have a few life between life therapists. So you can either, if you go to the MichaelNewtonInstitute.org, Newtoninstitute.org, There's a list of all the 250 therapists, because I know some people listen to your podcast in other places besides just England. But I'm in there. I'd be happy to do one for you. Or, you know, if you see someone there and you just feel a good feeling about that person, that's probably the one you need to have your session with. We all help each other, you know, doing this. And then my website is visittheafterlife.com. Very easy. Visittheafterlife.com. There's a lot of videos on there. And I also do traditional hypnotherapy too, just like Simon. It shows you the different modalities I use and videos on those. And all the information is there. So thank you, Simon, for allowing me to spread the word a little more. Just like you're a light worker, I'm a light worker. We're all trying to help people to take their next step in whatever their spiritual evolution is. And I know you enjoy your job. I enjoy mine. And you and I are both happy to help anybody that comes to us.
Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. Yeah. If in the future, if you want to revisit, we'll talk about all the other stuff.
So this week I was talking to Regan Forsten about his book, 3 Hours and 33 Minutes in Heaven. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And please look out for the Our Paranormal Afterlife episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.